This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Comics proudly presents DC Post-Crisis Management, a monthly miniseries exploring DC Comics crisis events from 1986 through today. Universes will die, continuities will reboot, minds will be bent, and eyes will cross. The end is only the beginning. Is the end. Or some such nonsense.
Gonna pull up here to the old studio. Looks like can't tell if anybody's here. Lights are on, but I don't know. Hang on, folks. I don't know how this is gonna go. Let me get out of the car here and see if anyone's here. Kind of looks deserted, but all the lights are on. It's weird. Thought Greg was a little more frugal than that. I mean, I drove all the way up here to the L-shaped studio, and there's nobody here. I mean, I thought Greg and Nick practically lived here, but, you know, I guess not. Hello? Anybody here? Greg? Nick? Ho-ho? Nope. Doesn't look like anyone's here. Well, I mean, I brought Greg this lovely Baconator from Wendy's. I know how much he loves those. And he is not here. I never noticed this before, but there's an L-shaped couch in the L-shaped studio. That's interesting. Anyway, I drove all the way up here to Vancouver to get some help with this this post-crisis management business that I've been dealing with. And you know, it's time to deal with Zero Hour. And I thought, you know, I need Greg's help for this because I don't know anybody more qualified to help me. But he doesn't seem to be around. So I guess that means that I'm just going to have to find some way to occupy my time while I wait for him. Dear God, all the lights on in here. I am turning some of these lights off. That is just crazy. Why is that even on? That's enough of that. And yeah, here we go. Here's the big switch. Oh yeah, and finally good and dark. I'll just lay down here and take a nap, and we'll see what happens.
Let's see here. This is weird. I told Ho-Ho to keep the energy costs as high as possible. I told him to leave all the lights running on the weekend, all the electronics running. Nothing's on. It's dark. This is ridiculous. I'm going to have to call Nick and see if we can get to the bottom of this, because I do not believe in conserving energy. What the hell? That's somebody on the L-shaped couch. Hey, you.
What? Yo. God, how long have I been here? I'm sorry, buddy. I fell asleep.
Russell, hey. What are you doing in the L-shaped studio? You're not even supposed to be here. This is our studio.
I know. I'm sorry about that. I came by to see you. I was needing some help, but I guess I fell asleep. And, you know, it was so bright in here. I don't know why you guys leave all the freaking lights on. What's wrong with you? Save power, man.
Remind me to fire Ho-Ho Loon, our butler.
He wasn't here when I got here. So, in fact, nobody was. It was just the lights on, and you know, I realize how bad this looks, and that I probably should have called ahead first. But this was kind of an emergency situation. But I brought you something.
I know. Oh, really?
I know you're a big fan of that Wendy's Baconator. So, here you go, buddy.
Oh, Russell, you shouldn't have. Now, I'm still upset that you broke into our studio and slept here without our permission and turned all our lights off. But in this case, I'll make it. What the hell is this? What? This is not a Baconator.
What? Yeah, it is.
This is just a crappy Wendy's sandwich of some kind.
There was bacon on it.
Hang on, let's see here. Three slices of bacon, Russell? On a Baconator?
Yeah. Is that not standard?
Well, if you're in Troy, Alabama, it is, but otherwise, no.
Oh, well, confession time, buddy. I got hungry waiting on you to get here, and the Baconator was the only thing I brought. So I kind of helped myself to a little. I'm sorry.
There's a term for people that give gifts to people and then take them back, but I'm not sure what it is. So, and I'm not going to say it right now, but that's what you are.
Bacon thief?
A bacon thief.
Okay, I'll accept it because bacon is so good.
You know what, Russell? If you keep up, you keep this up, and you're going to drive me to madness, and I might just declare myself some new name as a result of my madness.
Well, what's your favorite second superhero name, and why is it Monarch?
I might just skip Monarch and move right to Exton.
God, you see, this is why you're the perfect person for me to come to for this. I don't know if you know this, Greg, but Todd and I ventured into the world of Crisis on Infinite Earths recently.
Yes, I heard about that. Something about there being a monitor and an anti-monitor.
Yeah, we ventured into the idea of DC collapsing all their multiverse into a single Earth and straightening out their continuity and, you know, basically making everything fine, making it all very easy and accessible for everyone. That was the plan. But something went wrong. Suddenly, things didn't make sense. They kept publishing older versions of characters who had been supposedly retconned away. Suddenly the Legion of Superheroes are inspired by this Mon-El person instead of Superboy. There's this weird take on Hawkman that doesn't make any sense to the version that they're publishing now. What is this new origin for Batman, for even for Wonder Woman? And like it took them a while to figure out Superman, and it still doesn't make sense. Like, there's so much that's just gone horribly wrong here. And that's when it took them 10 years, apparently, to get around to trying to straighten it out. And I found this book, Zero Hour, Crisis in Time. And it's by Dan Jurgens and Jerry Ordway. And I figured, who's a bigger Dan Jurgens homer than Greg Phillips?
Yes, quite.
So as I read this, it just started to make things worse. So I thought, I got to get to the L-Shaped Studios. Greg is my only hope, and that's why I'm here.
So you came, just to be clear for the listeners of this recording that's always going on in the L-Shaped Studio, we always record everything here.
Yeah.
Just standard. To be clear, you traveled not just across the United States, but all the way to Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, broke in to our highly fortified studio, the L-Shaped Studio in Ho-Ho Loon Plaza.
Well, it broke's a little strong. Door was open.
Walked into our open studio in Ho-Ho Loon Plaza, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Took a nap on our couch, turned off all our power, thus helping the city of Vancouver save its energy, which we're not interested in. And now you want me, this is all just so you can get me to talk to you about a story that I barely remember from my childhood.
Yeah, that about sums it up.
All right, very good. I just recently reread it.
Ah, excellent. I knew I could count on you, Greg. I can always count on Greg Phillips. I say that all the time. And
people tell me that at the airport. You know, they pull me aside and they say, you know, Russell Sellers can always count on Greg Phillips.
That's true. I'm glad that word is getting around. And you know what? If this goes well, I'll buy you another Baconator.
All right. Maybe one with actual bacon on it this time.
Yes, I will not take the bacon off of it this time, and I promise we will not go to the Troy Wendy's.
Oh, thank God.
No, we will go to the Vancouver Wendy's.
Or should I say, think Parallax?
No. I'm twitching. That's wrong. But that's a good place to start, because from the jump of this event, I'm not really sure what I'm looking at, because things have remarkably changed since 1986. And here it is suddenly 1994, and I'm seeing this character named Wave Rider, and he's talking to someone who he does not really identify, but I had to ask the question, Greg, who's your favorite time traveler, and why is it Cable?
Yes. Cable is indeed among my favorite time travelers. Gosh, there's a lot to unpack here, Russell, just in your opening statement, and indeed just in the opening pages of Zero Hour. So in the time since you and Todd left your journey in Crisis on the Infinite Earths, a lot has changed. I mean, 10 years almost have passed. A decade, for the most part, has passed. The 80s are gone. We're into the 90s at this point. Fashion has changed. Culture has changed. Music has changed. Indeed, what we as comic book readers enjoyed had changed. Gone were the days of the giant boots and the pointy costumes and the penchant for adventure, and in its place was a lot of, well, grimdark comics, Russell.
Yes,
a lot of violence, a lot of grittiness, a lot of angst. We really loved our angst, and I can speak from experience, because I was a child of the early 90s that was an active comic book reader. A vociferous comic book reader, and I was in the DC universe big time at this point. So I was a huge fan of the universe, and I liked the kind of the angsty, you know, shoulder pads and whatnot. But there's no escaping the fact.
Nothing speaks to me quite like shoulder pads.
That's exactly right. Now, and it's different shoulder pads. Because obviously, the 80s had their own shoulder pads, usually in women's suits. But in the 90s, it was more of the giant, you know. Metal shoulder pads and whatnot, not unlike the Legion of Doom, as in the Road Warriors, that is, not the Lex Luthor-led group. But the Cable was obscenely popular in 1993-94, as were the X-Men in general. So naturally, at some point, and it's not clear to me when this happened, because I didn't know who or what a Rip Hunter was in 1994. I can assure you that, Russell. But what I did not notice until this reread is that they essentially redesigned him to look exactly like Cable.
Yes. I was like, when I opened this up, I was like, this is a DC book. What's Cable doing here?
Yes. Why is the Living Tribunal talking to Cable?
And what happened to all of Cable's pouches? I mean, if we're going to have Cable in a book, that's kind of essential.
Yeah,
they're gone.
I mean, you keep the shoulder pads, but you lose the pouches? Come on.
I mean, they did keep the most important part. We were just talking about that. So we get there, and Wave Rider, who I assume is just like, you know, this keeper of the time stream alongside this other organization that Rip Hunter is a part of, they're noticing some anomalies in time. Some things are changing. It's getting a little weird. And they mention that this character that people may remember from the old DC days, Hawk of the Hawk and Dove duo, has taken on the name Monarch after he killed his future self for his future self killing his partner Dove and him absorbing Dove's powers. And somehow he's also now adopted the name of his future self Monarch, but that's not going to last, because as he lures Wave Rider and Rip Hunter out of the time stream and into 1994 Washington, D.C., because comics, and... Oh, no, I've gone cross-eyed.
I was about to say, Russell, I went cross-eyed about the point that you mentioned that he killed his future self for killing the current version of Dove in front of his current self.
And then absorbing the powers of Dove to no longer be Monarch, but to become Extant.
Extant. And we know this, Russell. We know that he becomes Extant because... as he did when he became Monarch, he declares that he has now become this.
Yes.
So, you know, at first he's Hawk. He's just regular old Hawk, right? And then he kills Monarch only to realize that you know, he himself had killed Dove because he himself was Monarch, which drives him mad, forcing him to become Monarch Which begs the question, how did the original Monarch become the original Monarch to go back in time and kill Dove to make the old Hawk become the new Monarch?
Oh, God.
But but on top of that, he says, hey, I'm Monarch now. But at some point, for reasons unbeknownst to us until later in the, into the story, Monarch suddenly becomes more powerful than he's ever been before and says, oh, I realize how powerful I've been this whole time now. What kind of stupid name is Monarch? I don't want to be – who wants to be called Monarch? That's dumb. I'm going to be Extant now.
Yeah, why be named after a butterfly when you can be named after a – I don't know what.
I don't know what. I was waiting for you to finish that, Russell, because I don't know what. I don't know what an Extant is, but there he is. He's there, and he's telling people who he is. He kind of vaguely looks like Deadpool a little bit.
Yeah, he does. He looks like Deadpool with wings.
Yes. I mean, it's not a bad design by any means. You know what he looks like?
But, he looks like a downplayed version of Onslaught.
I could see that. Yeah. Especially when he's Monarch, because he's got the suit and everything, and then you take Onslaught's color scheme with Deadpool's mask and you've got Extant.
Yeah. And it's almost like they were saying, look, this is going to be our commentary on how stupid and useless Onslaught is, because as it will turn out, Extant is not even the primary villain of this story, though he is played as if he is almost until the last third of it.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, Russell, because indeed, almost the entirety of this story, we are led to believe that Extant is the primary villain of this book until suddenly he's not. And not only is he not, but he never has been.
No, and the thing is, in the very first, I guess it's technically the first issue, because as Zero Hour was coming out, they did it in a reverse numerical order. So Zero Hour number 4 came out first, and it counted down to 3, 2, 1, and then 0. Well, in that first issue, we go to the end of time, and we see Trapper being, I guess torn apart in this maelstrom by some assailant who's off panel, that we will later learn is actually Hal Jordan Parallax, who is now at the end of time. Yet it's also designated in here that was 32 hours ago, and I had to really wrestle with that in my head. Like, how is it 32 hours ago if it's also
on,
the
I've got
end
to,
of time?
I've got to pour a drink, Russell, for this.
Yep. I have driven Greg. No, it's not me that's driven you to this.
Time travel.
It is time travel, and Zero Hour nonsense has finally done what we all believed impossible. It has driven Greg to drink.
Now, when you mention Trapper, we should mention that this is the Time Trapper, the Legion of Superheroes. Like, I don't know anything about the Legion, to be quite honest with you. But I do know that Tenzel ate it, and I also know that the Time Trapper is one of the Legion's greatest enemies. He's one of their – he may be their greatest enemy. And so when you see him get punked out by somebody off – you know, some off unseen figure, which you later learn to be Parallax – it was a way of sort of establishing that whoever this new villain is this big badass that can kick the crap out of one of the Legion's greatest threats.
Yes, and since he is working from the end of time, he's sending a similar kind of white shockwave that we saw, that Todd and I saw in Crisis on Infinite Earths, but instead of it eating other universes, it seems to be eating timelines. And I got to tell you, I don't know what the difference is. But
I was going to ask – now that's something I was going to ask you, because, you know, I can tell you a lot of the nuts and bolts of this story, you know, how it came together, where it was stood in the – greater continuity of DC at that time, but I cannot for the life of you tell, for the life of me or you for that matter,
well,
tell
I'll
the difference between the multiverse, hyper time, and just alternate timelines. What is the difference in an alternate universe and an alternate timeline?
I really don't know. I mean, it doesn't really make a ton of sense. It seems like just alternate universes to me, because, for example, when we dive into the DCU proper and actually start seeing where our main heroes are, we start with Batman in Gotham City, and he's chasing the Joker, or it seems Joker's being chased by Batman, but it turns out, no, Joker's being chased by Batgirl. Barbara Gordon Batgirl. And astute DC fans will know that in 1994, Barbara Gordon was not Batgirl. She had been paralyzed by the Joker in the now like infamous Killing Joke story by Alan Moore. And she was confined to a wheelchair. So Barbara Gordon showing up as Batgirl and chasing down the Joker comes as a shock, not just to the readers, but to Batman and Robin, who show up to meet her. And of course, she doesn't recognize this Robin because this Robin is Tim Drake. And she, you know, thinks that this is just, you know, just a weird thing that's happening, but she quickly accepts it, I guess. And here's Batman and Robin like freaking out because
you including Tim Drake instantly being sexually attracted to Batgirl.
Yes.
Instantly.
Like he's down.
Because Batman's like, she looks healthy. And then Robin's like, she sure does.
I was like, Tim knew what was up. But we don't get much explanation for what's going on there because it jumps quickly away. But if you are an astute reader like myself and you've gone out and bought the Batman Zero Hour tie-in, this story gets explored to its conclusion. And you find out that it wasn't Barbara who was shot by the Joker in that alternate timeline. It was Jim Gordon, and he died. And
wow. See, I didn't even know that, Russell.
Yes.
I guess I never read – or I'd forgotten reading the Batman Zero Hour at some point. So my thought was it was just a Barbara taken from an earlier part in the timeline. But no, this is a Barbara where she was – where Gordon was shot or Commissioner Gordon was shot instead of her.
Yes.
Interesting.
Also, Harvey Dent never became Two-Face because there was no trial of Sal Maroni.
So these are just alternate universes.
They absolutely have to be. The multiverse that was supposedly destroyed – and Crisis on Infinite Earths apparently wasn't, because here we are pulling from they call it alternate timelines. I mean, you can call it whatever you want, but that's an alternate Earth. It's a multiverse all over again. And it seems, in my mind at least, that DC just, they couldn't quit the multiverse. They tried to, but they couldn't do it. They let it go.
I'll tell you what happened, Russell. What happened is, as often takes place, comic book companies and creators and editors and publishers and on down the corporate line overthink things to such a degree that after the crisis, the idea was to consolidate things and make it simpler. For the most part, I would argue that that worked in the case of the major characters, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman,
Flash,
Green Lantern, whatever.
Sure.
But for a lot of characters, it didn't. For Hawkman, for instance, which is – we'll get into that in a few minutes, Russell, because there's some interesting things to explore there. But what happens is they think that everything has to be explained, and they think that everything – they believe that they have to keep tinkering with characters – every couple of years. So what happens is you get, okay, we're going to introduce a new version of, I'm just going to throw this out there, Captain Marvel.
Sure.
All right, we have Captain Marvel, who has been in this post-crisis continuity already. Here's a new miniseries going to revamp his origins. Okay, but that old Captain Marvel was still there.
Yeah, they kept publishing the old ones.
Right. So then, okay, early 90s, we're going to let Jerry Ordway reboot Captain Marvel again. Well, now we have to explain what happened to the other. No, you don't have to explain it.
No,
you really
don't. You just cancel
it. It's not necessary. You just cancel it and move on. And you say this is a fresh beginning, like they did with Batman in 1987.
Yeah.
This is a fresh beginning for the character. And there weren't a lot of people – I can tell you, because I was a kid at that time, none of us were sitting around going, well, wait a minute. How come Batman was different in the 60s than he is now? Nobody cared. It was not important. But the comic companies cared. And so they thought, how can we have all of these different things going on? And so naturally, the way to explain it is pretty much the same thing that happened the first time.
we're doing a condensed version of Crisis on Infinite Earths,
yes.
Complete with this happens a slightly different way because Wave Rider and Rip Hunter decide to go back to Vanishing Point. And who the hell are they meeting here? Somebody from the I don't
the
know.
The Linear Men, right?
Yeah, yeah, one of the Linear Men. It's like, whoever this guy is. And he's like, you know, you're going to need a speedster to help you out. Who better? Let's go get us some Wally West. So they show up. Wally West is fighting somebody here. Doesn't really matter who. Because it's in the future, it seems. Like, yeah, he chased this dude to the future. Because that's a thing that was regularly happening in Flash at the time during Mark Waid's run. But which is great, by the way. Everybody should go read that. But they decide to use Flash's like tie to the Speed Force and reach what they call ultimate speed. I guess at least they didn't call it extreme. And,
ultimate speed, is that like where you you run down the ramp and you get into the ring and you shake the ropes a lot?
Yes, that's
very good.
Ultimate warrior speed.
Oh,
now if he had added some
key distinction,
if he had added some warrior into this, he might have actually survived this. Because as it turns out, apparently there's some kind of DC edict that you can't have a crisis without a dead Flash, and Wally West perishes in a very similar fashion to his mentor Barry Allen.
In a very, I would argue, in a very throwaway fashion.
Yeah, it is.
It does it not feel when you read this book and you see Wally's death? Does it not feel like almost unimportant in the greater narrative?
It does, and this, the whole idea
like, at least
here,
with Barry, I thought that Barry's sacrifice in the crisis was very well explained and was very well explored of, like, the fact that he was sacrificing himself for the universe. This is just Wally just kind of in futility dying, you know?
Yeah, and Barry's death was built to. It took a long time to get there in Crisis, and when it did, it felt earned. It felt like this big hero moment. Like you just said here, Wally is trying to fix the rift in time, as pointed out to him by Wave Rider and Rip. They're like, oh, if you reach this ultimate speed, we think that your collision with this rift and your infusion with the Speed Force will totally, like, fix everything. But instead, Wally West just dissolves into nothing. Mm. So that was for nothing. And they're like, well, we just killed Wally for nothing. And they're like, welp.
But yeah, and there he's gone. You do have a crisis with a dead Flash, but a dead Flash that ultimately means nothing.
No,
the greater narrative ultimately means.
It
I mean,
because he's still
Wally
dead.
Has been rendered. Yeah,
he's still dead at the end of the story. But in the very next issue of Mark Waid's Flash, he brings Wally back.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, that happened.
The one good thing that comes out of Wally's death, though, Russell, is probably my favorite scene in Zero Hour.
Yes.
Because
I did want to get to that, because we haven't even talked about how Metron suddenly shows up in this.
Oh, yes.
Which we saw him – granted, I'll give it – to backtrack a little bit, we did see him very early on as he's trying to convince Darkseid that something is happening.
Darkseid has the best reaction ever.
He's like,
piss off, Metron. I'd know if something was wrong. But Darkseid, no, it's all fine.
Nope. Darkseid is like, I want nothing to do with this or you. I hope all the bad things in life happen to all of you and nobody else but you.
But you.
And
also, if there was anything wrong, I'd know about it. Piss off. Yeah.
He's like, and Metron's like, okay, well, I'll go find allies. And he meets up with Superman and Batman a little bit later, and he's just like, oh, so I suppose you guys have noticed that some things have gone a little screwy. And Superman is like, yeah, I just, you know, met my Kryptonian parents for the first time ever, and we had a conversation about how I have a brother. Oh, that's right, that's not covered in this. That's covered in the Superman Zero Hour tie-in book, which I actually did enjoy reading, because that 90s Superman is vastly underrated.
Oh, it's great. It's so good. But two funny things about Metron's first appearance: he shows up out of nowhere acting like the most dramatic person in the world. The universe is at stake. Stop it now.
He's then, that voice that you always heard in the Legion of Challenge of the Super Friends show.
Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice. So then Superman tells him this long and elaborate and emotional story about the pain that he's going through, the heartache of dealing with his Kryptonian family and learning all these things about his past that you know, for him, shook him to his core, only for Metron to seemingly listen and then just go, indeed. Not caring at all about Superman's feelings.
So what I hear you saying then is that Metron is the Nick Duke of of DC Comics.
Yes, absolutely. I would very strongly say that he will make dramatic proclamations and then listen to someone else reply and then have a short one word response clearly intended just to move the conversation on.
Dear God. But we're coming to, we mentioned Hawkman earlier, and I feel like it's about time to get to that. Because there's a scene here where, you know, Wave Rider and Rip Hunter have gone through time. They're still trying to find allies, and they even run into a time-displaced Hal Jordan at one point, who's trying to fix a rift in time, and he seemingly gets obliterated.
Mm-hmm.
So they move
on. Funny you should say that.
Yeah, so they move on very quickly. They're like, well, that guy's not going to help us, so on we go. And they run into Hawkman on Earth 2. Or not on Earth 2, but on Earth, because there is no Earth 2, according to this.
No.
But, I mean, bullshit. Yes, there is. There are multiple Earths. And suddenly, as Hawkman is taking down Vandal Savage in an alleyway, because, yeah, he suddenly splits into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 versions of himself.
And we should mention that for those who are completely oblivious to DC continuity, Hawkman is the most notoriously convoluted character in all of DC Comics.
Absolutely.
There have been upwards of probably a dozen different versions of Hawkman, Hawkwoman, Hawkgirl, the Hawk people. Sometimes they're Thanagarians. Sometimes they're art dealers. Sometimes they're police officers. Sometimes they're all three. But it was actually Hawkman was one of the characters that actually created the supposed need for this zero-hour event.
That is true. And for those Marvel fans out there who may be checking this out for the first time, especially if you're an X-Men fan, reading Hawkman comics will feel like coming home. So,
you know, there's a lot of truth. I feel like the Hawkman or Hawk people family tree is probably a very similar to the Summers family tree.
It is. That is an apt comparison, I think. That's pretty right on. So especially you Cyclops fans out there, you should definitely get in on some Hawkman. I think you'll be very pleased with what you read because that natural state of confusion is very familiar to you. But we get here, and these six Hawk people, Hawk men, if you will, yeah, they're just Hawk men, they're all saying the exact same thing, but seem to be completely oblivious to each other's existence. But Vandal Savage can see it, and he's tripped out. But that leads to a big happening in this book where they combine all of the Hawk men together. They figure out a way to run all of them together to create what they tell us is going to be like a new god, or they tease it like it's going to be a new god version of Hawkman. And it's not just the six versions of him. It seems like there's like dozens of him or more.
And they indicate that this is a far more powerful version of Hawkman than has ever been before.
Yeah.
Hence the new god comparison. But then over the course of the story after this, he proceeds to do absolutely nothing.
He is useless after this. He just stands there. They're like, okay, we've combined all of Hawkman into one. And
not even just Hawkman, by the way. There's Hawkgirl is absorbed into this creature as well.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Hawkgirl gets like fully absorbed as well. So now there's only the Hawkman. And as Metron puts it in his very dramatic way, it is a birth. At the least, a powerful ally. We need to turn the tide in our own battle. At the most, a new god.
Yes. And it's apparently not that powerful of an ally, though.
No, because he proceeds to do absolutely fuck all.
And gets the shit beat out of him by Parallax.
and you know, Extant's still over here carrying on like he's the biggest badass in the room. All these multitudes of DC characters have been brought together, including a Guy Gardner warrior.
Which... Guy Gardner Warrior at this time. Now, I didn't. My memories of this era of Guy Gardner are a little bit vague. Post JLA, post Death of Superman, a little vague on what was going on with him. He was wearing some sort of a suit of armor, and calling himself Warrior already. During the course of this story, is where they suddenly, out of nowhere, introduce the concept of him having alien powers.
Yes, they introduce alien DNA into Guy Gardner in this story as a result of the resetting timeline. Because reasons.
Russell, I'm getting real close to just throwing myself off the ledge. I'm not there yet.
I've been standing here for...
I'm supposed to be counseling you.
I know.
And I'm the one that's being driven insane now.
Yeah, I'm still laying here on the couch because I can't move, buddy. And you know, lay down here next to me. It helps.
That's nice.
Yeah. See, it helps you to kind of process things a little bit better. But we do have to remark on at least one good aspect of this story, and that's
certainly
the artwork.
Yes.
The Dan Jurgens and Jerry Ordway art, especially this gigantic splash page where you see all the superheroes coming together. I actually really dug it.
So it's hard for me to even be objective talking about this artwork because this was the artwork of my childhood.
Absolutely.
This was kind of my peak of comic book fan. Zero Hour came out probably around... maybe a little bit after, but right around the time of the peak of my comic book fandom. And so this artwork was like what I thought comic books were. This is, to me, this is what superheroes were. This is what superheroes looked like. I had a Superman t-shirt that was Dan Jurgens Superman. The art here is just, to me, iconic. It's classic. The splash pages are great. The action scenes are great. I will say that I think there was probably something of a time crunch going on with this story, if I had to guess, because there has been with every other crisis level event there's ever been.
Seems that way.
So there's a couple of action sequences, particularly towards the end of the book, that are a little confusing in terms of I can't really tell what's going on or who's attacking who in some of the scenes.
Sure.
But for the most part, it's really, really good art, and the figures are iconic. The facial expressions are great. We haven't gotten there yet, but the way that Jurgens and Ordway draw the Justice Society in particular,
oh yes,
stood out to me as really great, especially as they go through their character arc in this story.
I'm not a huge fan necessarily of mulleted Superman, but the way Dan Jurgens renders him is pretty tremendous. And he even makes me like this old school Nightwing suit.
Mm-hmm.
I actually like this take on it. I mean, I could do without Nightwing seeming rat tail, but
that was a big thing at the time. At that time, Nightwing was known for having either a ponytail or just long hair in general with his kind of Native American inspired suit. And it was an interesting look for the time.
Yeah.
But I think Dan Jurgens drew it significantly better than most people did.
This rendering of Guy Gardner should have a mustache.
Oh, absolutely.
It feels incomplete without, especially on the close ups. It kind of feels like they might have drawn one there and then somebody came back and said, No, you can't do that. Can't have facial hair.
Yeah, he doesn't need a mustache. He's Guy Gardner. But yeah, he Voldarian DNA. The art throughout this is great. The character designs for the X-Men's got a cool design.
Yeah.
Of course, Parallax, which had already been designed, for all of my issues with the Parallax storyline, that costume design is awesome. One of the best I think DC has probably ever done for a major villain.
Oh, sure. I would also say that I actually like the Booster Gold look in this.
Interesting. That is somewhat controversial.
It is. I will. It's not a hill I'm willing to die on, but it is a hill I'm willing to sit on.
Especially if you have a Baconator.
You're never going to let that go, are you?
Not until I get my new one.
That was 30 minutes ago.
Was it 30 minutes ago Earth time, or was it 30 minutes ago from Vanishing Point?
For God's sake, I just uncrossed my eyes.
Have we even mentioned Vanishing Point?
Vaguely. We mentioned that Vanishing Point is this place that exists outside of time, and you have your linear men who are housed there as their headquarters. They are the guardians of the time stream who really suck at their jobs.
They're horrible.
They're the worst. They are just the worst. And Rip Hunter is their leader, and I got to tell you... Cable Rip here is just absolutely useless. I mean, he's Hawkman levels of useless in this.
He not only doesn't succeed at anything that he tries to do, He actively hinders things by constantly questioning everything Wave Rider does.
Oh, let's go get Wally West. He'll be able to help us out. Oh, he's dead. Oh, okay. Never mind. Oh, look, there's a time-displaced Hal Jordan. Let's get him. Well, he's dead, too. Never mind.
Well, this is all your fault, Ryder.
Yeah, it's like he's blaming Wave Rider for this, and I'm like, you are here, too. Like, good God.
So while we're talking about good things about the story, though, Russell, we're talking about the art and how great the art was, and it truly is great art. But like, maybe we haven't talked about maybe the greatest part, not my favorite scene, but maybe the greatest part of this story, which is that moment, the moment when Extant comes face to face with Wave Rider.
I'm looking at it right now,
and he takes his face off.
This did come out in 94 prior to the movie Face Off coming out, so I'm wondering if John Woo was a DC
fan. John Woo was sitting at home reading this going,
He's like, I bet I could do that with Nicolas Cage and John Travolta. People would love it.
Yes, because here's the scene for you folks. There's a big confrontation between Wave Rider and Extant, and they have a great history with each other. Or not a great history. They just have a history with each other.
They've been battling since the beginning of this story. They have had several fights.
Because, in fact, Wave Rider was created in the Armageddon 2001 crossover storyline a couple years before this by Dan Jurgens as a character who was experimented upon by Monarch and given his powers of becoming Wave Rider and traveling through time, riding the wave of time, if you will. Well, this is a big dramatic moment as they're coming face to face, and then Extant is explaining to Wave Rider why he's no longer Monarch and that Wave Rider doesn't understand the scope of what's going on, and he says, here, perhaps this will help you, or something like that. He takes off his mask to reveal Wave Rider's own face.
Look familiar?
It is one of the most laughable scenes of any story I've read in a while. It was hilariously awesome. So, like, it's terrible. Like, don't get me wrong.
Yes, it's awful.
It's so goofy and cliche, but I laughed out loud, and I can't remember the last time recently that I laughed out loud at a comic book. It was so funny to read, to see this scene where he takes it off, and of course it's Wave Rider's face underneath. And then we find out why is because he, at some point, a future past version of Extant goes back to the beginning of time, fights Wave Rider, and steals his powers. And then combines with a current version of Extant, who is currently at Vanishing Point.
But how can he be at Vanishing Point when they're at Vanishing Point at the same time? It all exists outside of time. You know what? You know what? That just wadded up that page and tossed it.
That's the ultimate thing about this. Vanishing Point exists outside of time.
Yes.
But yet they're constantly going back there, and it's always like regular time passing. Like, well, we were here a few minutes ago. Now we're here now. What?
Eh. Why?
Where's Larfleeze to show up and go, eh?
We are Larfleeze. We are the audience. We're reading this. I mean, I can't even imagine reading this at the time. Actually, you know what maybe would have helped in our reread of this? If DC had collected all of the unfortunately necessary tie-ins to it. Greg, do you realize there were 33 tie-ins that you have to read to get the full story of this?
I didn't until you mentioned it to me, because what I remember about Zero Hour as a kid, I know I bought some of the single issues of it, but I definitely got the trade later on. Also, the tie-ins are not included in that. And I was reading at the time the Superman books. I was reading a couple of the Batman books, but kind of off and on from DC. And I was reading, you know, just a random book, maybe a Flash here or there, what have you. My reading had slowed down a lot because it was getting harder for us to get comics and stuff. So
that and the whole reading every page twice.
Yeah, well, yeah, slow reading and all that. I wasn't as slow a reader when I was a kid, but Zero Hour was coming out in the context of all this other stuff going on at the time as a 10-year-old. I didn't care. Like, I was able to follow it along as best, you know, I just kind of, whatever I didn't understand, I would just wave away as, well, whatever. You know, it's probably going on in the pages of Death Blow or some book I wasn't reading. I don't know. That just sounds like a book that would have existed. And then so then I was able to hand wave it away. But at the time,
there was a book called Anima.
And I don't have any idea what that is.
It is a fictional character who starred in his comic book series of the same name. Duh.
Of course.
He was written by science fiction and fantasy authors Elizabeth Hand and Paul Whitcover. And I'm looking at that cover of one of those books now, and I'm like, man, this is as 90s as it gets. Shoulder pad blades and everything.
Oh, yeah. When it came to Marvel, I kind of dug the more obscure characters at that time. But at that time, when it came to DC, I wanted my Superman, I wanted my Batman, I wanted my, you know, handful of other characters.
The classics, the big seven.
Yeah, I wanted my classic characters. I wasn't as into the more ancillary characters at that time. Unless they were Superman side characters, like Gangbuster. I was abnormally interested in Gangbuster.
And Bibbo.
And Bibbo. Cool. Bibbo is awesome, though.
Yes,
Bibbo should have had his own ongoing, where he knocks out non-powered DC villains. So it's so confusing without the context. Now reading it all these years later, and as an adult, there's no way to not analyze things deeper than you do as a kid. So when I read something that doesn't make any sense, it's not as simple for me to compartmentalize it and push it aside, because now I'm just like, why? Why did he say that? What does that have to do with anything? And then you realize, oh, that's because it was something that happened in Guy Gardner's own solo title that ties into Zero Hour, where he apparently loses the love of his life at some point.
Yeah, because at the end of one of these issues, Guy Gardner is all gung-ho for the fight. Let's go, you know, to the end of time and take this bastard on head on. And somewhere along the way, he gets pulled into an alternate timeline or whatever and has to watch Ice get killed. But that doesn't happen in the main series. So if you're only reading Zero Hour, Guy Gardner suddenly having this wave of emotion and being like broken down and unable to fight doesn't make 1 ounce of sense.
Mm-mm. No, that doesn't make sense. The Batgirl stuff doesn't totally make sense. There's a lot of things that happen in the course that are like, huh? When did that happen? Like, what's going on here? I feel like, Russell, we haven't read them because DC has never collected them for some unknown reason, but I would love to go through and read all the tie-ins to find out more of the context of this Parallax and Extant relationship, if there was any exploration made of that.
Yeah.
Because it is all over the place.
It is a mess of a story, and trying to explain it even in the context of the story. Like, I can't imagine Dan Jurgens, Jerry Ordway, and Frank Fosco and Ken Branch all trying to like figure this mess out and straighten it out. But ultimately, we do come to probably the most evil thing that Extant does in the whole book, when he gains control over time because of his comboed Wave Rider abilities. He can take away the magical thing that's been put in place to keep the JSA from aging. Basically, he says, "Olde," and they all wither.
It's interesting that right before that scene, Russell, he took off his mask, and instead of Wave Rider's head, it was an old gypsy man.
Yes, he became an old gypsy man, at least in our headcanon he does, because that's – you know what? It could be real canon too, for as crazy and stupid as this is. Not to mention there's a pregnant Power Girl running around here because –
oh, my gosh. We almost have to talk about that at some point. I don't have any at all memory of that.
I don't either. I'm like, I saw her pregnant. I was like, huh? Who da daddy? Who da pappy? Who da pappy?
Oh, boy. We got to get into that. Yeah.
And you've also got Donna Troy is a dark star.
Yes.
Which will really throw you if you're not prepared for that, and I wasn't.
I did remember that for some unknown reason. I remember this because the Dark Stars were getting a big push at DC at the time. The Eradicator, believe it or not, was a Dark Star.
Oh, God.
And so they were kind of getting a push at that time.
Man, dealing with like all this just absolute bonkers stuff. And then, of course, we do throw in the Pocket Earth from the 30th century. and the Legion of Superheroes, because we couldn't not have this event. I mean, it's a time travel event. You got to have the Legion in there at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got all these, you know, just like in the original Crisis, teams of heroes battling in the present day, and then other heroes battling in a far-flung future, trying to, you know, stop the end of existence. And while it would be fun to talk about, you know, pregnant Power Girl and Donna Troy as a Dark Star, we do have Jay Garrick realizing that there is one who might be powerful enough to go to the end of time, and he actually goes to the Spectre to try and convince him to help them out. And I actually thought this was a pretty good scene.
Yeah. Yeah. The Spectre, by the way, at this point in DC canon, the Spectre had evolved far beyond what he was in the Golden Age when he was with the Justice Society and, you know, fighting street criminals largely. The Spectre at this point in DC continuity is literally the wrath of God. He is considered the most powerful, or among the most powerful entities mm-hmm. in the DC universe, beyond Superman, beyond Darkseid, a level of a powerful entity. So for him to intervene takes something important going on. And that's what Jay Garrick is trying to do here. He's trying to plead with his old friend, whatever's left of Jim Corrigan, to intervene and save the universe. Well, the Spectre, of course, says that Jim Corrigan's not here. This is the Spectre. However, yeah. this meets the threshold.
Yeah, he's like, oh, this checks all the boxes. I'll jump into this and I'll totally avenge your death. And Jake is like, my death? What are you talking about? And then he just fades away.
Just let me finish this episode of Grace Under Fire, and then I'll be right down there.
Oh, 1994 references.
So you mentioned that this scene was great, and it was a great scene. I will go further than that, Russell. I think all the Justice Society stuff here is fantastic.
I thought the
Justice Society was the best part of Zero Hour by far.
I would tend to agree with that. They're the ones that seem to have the most to lose, and yet they add the most to the story.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's their time that seems to be being wiped out first, even though he's wiping it out from the end of time backwards. You know what? It's best you just don't think about it too hard, because it'll give you a headache. My head hurts. But anyway, you know, Metron's still doing Metron things. Trying to keep all the heroes together and formulating a plan. Batman is standing over here being useless, which is just like he was in Crisis on Infinite Earths. Batman has basically nothing to do.
And at one point, Guy Gardner even calls him out on it, I think. And then his response is a very un-Batman, "Shut up, Gardner."
Yes, he's like, I think he finally backed him into that corner. He's like, I've finally shown that you are absolutely useless in a situation. You've got nothing. It's like, the Atom is more useful than you in this. Hell, Green Arrow turns out to be more useful. Yeah, I went there. The story goes there.
Yeah.
The story does that. I mean, it makes me think Dan Jurgens really doesn't think very highly of Batman.
Yeah, I can't remember a Crisis. Now, it's been a while since I've read the original Crisis, but I can't remember another Crisis where Batman had so little a role. Where not only does he not have an action scene, really, in which he does anything, he doesn't really have any leadership moment. He doesn't really have a heart-to-heart talk that has any impact on the reader, really. He's largely irrelevant in this story.
He very much is irrelevant in this story. But I think we've talked about the setup. I got to ask, how did you feel when Parallax was revealed to be the true villain of all this, and that Extant has really just been a stand-in, largely?
Well, there's two... I have to go back to my childhood to remember how I felt about this at the time, because I remember that I wasn't surprised as a kid. I distinctly remember that. I was not surprised that Parallax was a villain, because this came right after Emerald Twilight.
Yeah.
And we knew that he had been Hal Jordan had been out there somewhere in the cosmos doing something and didn't know what. He was going to come back. So I wasn't terribly surprised when he shows up here as the villain. as a kid. The one thing that I think as an adult reading it does make it a surprise is that there's really no foreshadowing to it in terms of Extant is presented as the villain. Like, there's no point in the dialogue where he alludes to a greater plan for someone else. He never at one point, at any point that I saw, does he allude to working with someone else. He seems to view himself as being all powerful. So the fact that it's revealed that he has been working for Parallax this whole time, it really throws you for a loop in terms of, well, so much for all that Extant being this hyper powerful, you know, figure, because Parallax pretty much owns him, right?
Yeah, like Parallax puts him down like he basically is nothing. But he does the same thing to Superman. And it only seems to get worse from there, including, I'm sorry, DC, I'm going to have to call you out for putting four blank pages in your book. Can you just...
I remember that. When I was a kid, I was like, what?
There are four blank pages in this issue as we're getting into the end of it, supposedly representative of time coming to an end and then suddenly...
Mm-hmm. Complete entropy.
Like complete entropy and restarting. I think you could have done it in one. You just wasted paper here. You just did it because you could. Jackasses. But
so the Parallax, the reveal of Parallax as the villain, also on a different level, is the, if you take the story in and of itself of a guy who's a good guy and he is driven insane by the events around him and becomes a villain. Well, I mean, that's kind of the Killing Joke, but
yeah,
it's done much better. But that in and of itself worked for me as a kid because I had not read The Killing Joke, and so I understood the story. However, at no point does this make any sense for Hal Jordan as a character.
I mean, it's the whole – yeah, like how did he even get – I mean, his explanation for how he even got this powerful doesn't make sense.
No, I mean, he was powerful enough absorbing all the Green Lantern energy into himself.
Yeah,
but now he's absorbing Cronal energy too.
Yeah, and he just says, "I found a way to do it." And I'm like, "Okay, well, that's convenient."
there's a lot of that in this.
And he goes to the end of time. And Greg, this is I gotta be honest, buddy. This is the real reason that I'm here. As I'm sitting here listening to Parallax talk about what he wants to do, he wants to reset time so that everything is good again. So that everybody who died in Coast City is back. Everybody, all the Green Lantern Corps comes back. Guy Gardner wouldn't be Warrior anymore. John, Guy, Kilowog. Even Kyle would get to keep his ring and still be GL. Like, everybody who died would be back. It would be fixing everything, and he has the power to do it. Am I wrong for agreeing with Parallax?
No! I thought the same thing. I thought the exact same thing when I was reading it this time. Now, as a kid, I didn't, because Superman was against them, and if Superman was against it, by God, it was wrong. And so I didn't question it as a kid. But now, reading it as an adult, I'm reading through it, and I'm like, you know, as he's trying to convince Guy Gardner, basically, of what he's doing, and I'm thinking, I don't see anything wrong with what he's doing. I mean, I don't think it's that much different from – No. Most of the other things these heroes have done over the years, whether it was tampering with the time stream or, setting things right again.
Yeah. How's
how do they know what's right? Yeah.
How's it any different than Barry Allen fixing the time stream?
Exactly.
How's that any different? It's not. It's the same thing. Like, you're trying to tell me that Parallax is a villain here. I mean, Extant is definitely a villain. I mean, I'm
100%. Yeah, because he wants to rule. He wants to create a timeline where he rules.
Yes, and apparently that was the conditions of him helping Hal Jordan, was that he would get a timeline to rule as his own. Now here, I'm like, well, Hal, you just made Extant your bitch and showed that he has no actual power over you whatsoever. You're going to reset the timeline. You don't have to make good on that deal. You can be like, sorry, pal, you turned out to be a complete and utter psychopath. I'm not going to let you do that. I'm going to bring other people back to life. We're going to have a good Earth, and you're going to go away now. Bye-bye. And that could have been it. But that's the only reason that Guy Gardner turns on Hal. It's the only reason that the Batgirl from that alternate timeline, she agreed with Parallax. She was like, you could fix all of this, and the only reason they turned on him is because he was still going to give Extant that Earth to rule.
Right.
And
yeah, and
I'm and, like, if that's it, y'all couldn't have talked
about Guy Gardner or your Batgirl. You know, Guy's just been talking to Guy was literally just saying a minute ago, we can set things right and get Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps back.
Yeah.
And so, suddenly he's against it now because everybody's telling him he should be against it.
And it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
No, because I'm with him. And here's the other thing I wanted to mention about Parallax is the there's a couple of frustrating things about Parallax. Obviously, the entire taking Hal Jordan and turning him into a raving madman. There's maybe a way to tell that story long term, but the way they did it didn't work with Emerald Twilight and all that. And that's arguable. We can get to that some other time. But the point being, as we see him here in Zero Hour, Hal Jordan no longer even resembles the character of Hal Jordan that he had been before. He now monologues. He speaks in overly dramatic villain cliches.
And it's garbage. It really is.
I'm trying to find the line that really
did it for
the line that really like got me is let's see. These fissures are caused by nutrition. I'll remove it as easy as I remove you if you get in my way. You know, stuff like that. Like, I do have the power to kill you, Superman.
Yeah, it's like, but then he gets lines like he accidentally kills that alternate timeline Batgirl because she jumped. Who does she jump in front of? Oh, she saves Damage, who was creating a new Big Bang. Yeah, that's I just uttered that sentence. And as he does it, he Oliver Queen witnesses this, and he's just taken aback. He's never seen Hal do something like this up close, I guess. I mean, I guess he missed that whole like murdering the Green Lantern Corps thing. But Hal turns to him and is like, she will live again in my universe. Everything will be right. This won't stop me. And here I am like, let him reset time. Everything will go back to the way it was. That Batgirl will be alive. None of this will have happened. And no, Kyle Rayner.
They value their own lives, their own universe, their own timeline more than they value Batgirl's timeline.
Yeah, clearly. They're like, oh, well, she's died, and you're saying you could bring her back and like set all this right. Like, he could have undone the Killing Joke right here. And, yep. But no, Kyle Rayner grabs Hal from behind, grabs Parallax, holds him still so that Oliver Queen can shoot him in the chest with just a regular old arrow.
A regular arrow.
And that
he is gone. He has gone in a matter of moments, thanks to the combined efforts of Wave Rider, Damage, or Damage, as Mean Gene would call him,
Damage,
and several others. He has gone from the most powerful entity that has ever existed in the DC universe, maybe short of the Anti-Monitor, to so weak that a simple shot from a single arrow that doesn't even seem to penetrate his suit very far is enough to seemingly kill him.
And then the Spectre steps in and wipes him out for good, or it finishes off the Big Bang, as it were, so that the time fully gets set in motion. Everything starts to go back to the way it was.
Here's the mustache twirling line that got me. I finally found the page here. So he shows up and he's standing over Superman's body, and Green Arrow shouts out, "Green Lantern!" And he goes, "Not Green Lantern, Arrow. Not anymore. I've taken the name Parallax. I've seen the universe from many different directions, and I know how to fix it, even if it means destroying it." I can't see any version of Hal Jordan ever uttering those words, even if he had gone mad.
Vince McMahon Jordan would do it.
Yes, of destroying it. And, well, if you take into account the graying temples and stuff, maybe Vince as Hal Jordan would have worked.
You know what? I'm actually starting to see it.
I can see this in a new context now.
This is, imagine Vince McMahon instead of Hal Jordan, and it all fits so much better. But then you wind up agreeing with him. Like, this, I mean, we've said for years that the best villains are the ones who make a strong point, but this took it a little bit further and said, no, this is one where the villain is actually right.
And I think they really misjudge their audience at this point, because I think a lot of readers kind of did want to see what would happen if Parallax changed things, because they kind of wanted the Green Lantern Corps back. They kind of wanted you know, some of these things back that had been messed up. Like, they might, maybe there was a generation of readers. I wasn't among them because she was never Batgirl when I was a kid. But maybe there's a generation of readers that wanted Barbara Gordon back as Batgirl again at that time. I don't know. But regardless, there was a lot. there was a lot of stuff going on there that you know, maybe you're misjudging how the audience is going to feel here. And I do take the point that, you know, I did think it was legitimate for Oliver, because Oliver has always been against anyone playing God. Sure. And so I can see Oliver being against it. But some of these characters, you know, I was like, Guy Gardner? I don't think that he would be against this, even with his issues with Jordan over the years.
Especially not if he could see how his costume looks after the timeline resets.
Oof. Hey, what happened to my armor?
Yeah, where armor go? Where go? And he's got this like weird alien tattoo scribbling all over him, and his eyes are all white and everything. Oh God, this is emblematic of everything that was wrong with the 90s. This is just bad. Nothing about this is good. That sucks. But end of the day, we still have old man Jay Garrick. He came back, not de-aged, though it does seem that Alan Scott, the original Earth Green, the Golden Age Green Lantern, escaped any of the advanced aging problems.
Yes, his ring protected him from the chronal blast.
That is true. And,
however, he is left so emotionally and spiritually broken by the events of what happened to his friends that he gives up being Green Lantern.
That is true, yeah. He gives that up. Power Girl gives birth. I'm not sure if this will actually
I don't know who that boy is.
I don't know that it ever really gets explored further. But supposedly this put, you know, this was all supposed to put the DC timeline in a more like sensible fashion. Like, we went to all this trouble, you know, having this big event, lots of tie-ins and crossovers, and I mean, what a mess. And I still feel like here at the end, I don't understand where time is all set. Hang on a second. What the... Greg?
I'm here.
I know you're here. I can feel you right here beside me, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
I flipped to the back of the book, and there's a timeline
mm-hmm.
printed back here that tells you where all this stuff takes place, where all these characters first appeared, where major events in DC history from the beginning of time, from the Big Bang, all the way up to the modern day. It puts all these characters in their proper place, tells you like what years they were active, all that stuff. It's all
certainly
convenient.
Very helpful.
It's all conveniently right here, which leaves me with only one final question. Why didn't they just print that in the back of their books instead of doing this? This whole event is completely unnecessary. That timeline would have saved us all the trouble, and we wouldn't be sitting here on this couch right now, and I wouldn't have eaten the bacon off of your Baconator.
Well, what I'd like to do, Russell, is go back in time and change you from eating the bacon off of my Baconator.
Oh, God.
But unfortunately, I don't have the chronal energy to make that happen. But what I do have is the chronal energy to know that in 1994, they were primarily just concerned with selling books. So they thought, hey, let's take advantage of this controversial storyline we did where Green Lantern went evil and make him the villain of this multi-part story that is a way for us to right the ship on some things continuity-wise, instead of just printing a timeline in the back of their ongoing books and not disrupting the ongoing storylines going on there.
And as I read it, they didn't even change that much. There's
no.
Nothing that's really all that major. I mean, the biggest change, I think, the one that sticks out to me anyway, is Batman no longer knows who killed his parents.
Yeah.
Like, the Joe Chill angle is erased from the timeline, and whoever killed his parents is a mystery, much like Evolution.
Mm.
And they also, what else did they do to Batman? They made him more of an urban legend.
Yeah,
they readopt that part. I don't have much of a problem with. I kind of dig that. But I do wish we had known, you know, kept the Joe Chill part. But I don't know, from from this mystery that I'm following through all these crisis events, it seems that that's going to be put back into place at some point. I'm hearing all these different stories, but I think our time here has reached an end.
Total entropy is enveloping the hard traveling studios.
It is. It is. It has come to it, Greg, but in talking through all this, you have helped me to uncross my eyes.
I'm glad I could help you in that regard.
You have. You have been a tremendous help in helping me through this post-crisis management. I feel much better, even though I also at the same time feel worse.
So, well, at least you don't feel as bad as Dr. Midnight does.
No.
As he has perished from coronal energy attacks.
Few people will feel as bad or as useless as Dr. Midnight. That is that much is true, but much like Wally West, I will rematerialize only one issue later and will run ever present into the future. So you know what? I think it's time for us to get off the L-shaped couch and go find that Vancouver Wendy's, because I feel like I need to go ahead and give you that Baconator, and then I have to be on my way to my next destination.
Absolutely. You know, they keep weird hours at this Vancouver Wendy's, but the good news is I got this special wristband that will allow us to go at any point in time to the Wendy's. So I'll give you one, and we'll take one, and we'll make like the linear men and set things right.
Yes, but we will. Let's not visit Vanishing Point. I don't want to ever go there.
It's a strange place.
And speaking of strange places, my next stop on this journey is, it looks like I'm headed to Vegas. Las Vegas, Nevada.
Gosh, what in the world would be in Las Vegas, Nevada, Russell?
I don't know, but from the looks of, you know, this journey, this map that I'm following, it's a crisis of infinite proportions. I mean, bigger than maybe anything since the original crisis. I mean, it from the looks of this, it dwarfs Zero Hour. But I got a better feeling about it. You know, I feel like there's something.
I feel it too. I feel the same way, Russell.
I got a real good feeling about this next one, and I think I got to go find someone who was there the moment that it happened. You know, so not somebody who was creating the crisis, but someone who was bearing witness to it in almost a first-hand kind of way, or a second-hand kind of way.
Some hand kind of way.
Someone who can decipher the code, which is Morse. Yes. I think I have a path now, Greg, and those who are going to follow this journey can go with me to Vegas, as I will dive headlong into what appears to be an infinite crisis, and I'll have to report back. But if I want to tell you about it, Greg, how can I tell you about it? I want to find you on social media, how can I tell you about it?
There are a few ways you can tell me about your journey, Russell. You can contact me on Twitter at gphillips8652. You can contact me on the Facebook Place to Be Nation comics page.
That's a good place.
Where I will often be found. You can find me even on Twitter at PTBNPop. Sorry, PTBNComics on Twitter.
Oh, I was about to say, did we reset a timeline? And I'm only like just now becoming aware of it.
It's hard to tell sometimes. And then finally, well, not finally. There's two other ways. You can send me an email, gregp@placetobenation.com, loneliest email address on the internet.
I'll send you something.
And finally, if you really need to reach out to me, Russell, use that wristband that I gave you, and Wave Rider himself will bring. We're real tight. We've been friends since 1992, and so Wave Rider will bring me to your location.
And you and I have been friends since 2004. That sounds.
I think that's about right. Yeah,
2003, 2004,
somewhere in that frame.
In that frame, yeah. We've been at this a long time. Oh, look, I just found I have your number in my phone. I can just text you.
Oh, very good. That's much better than the Wave Rider.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot more direct, I think. I don't think I really want to hang out with Wave Rider too much. But and if you want to continue following me on this journey, you, of course, can hit me up on the Twitter machine, at Russell_Sellers. You can, I will also be in the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page, and the group, if you will. And there will be more episodes of this post-crisis management journey coming in the very near future. And of course, we may see you again, Greg, in the future on in future episodes of other shows. If I just happen to, you know, break into the L-shaped studio again,
I will warn you, we are going to try to tighten our security, but
that's all right. If you're going to buy a Keelix, I got to tell you, it's pretty useless.
Understandable. But the one thing that I've learned from our journey today, Russell, is that whether you come to me in the future, whether you come to me in the past, ultimately it doesn't matter.
Yes, we will get through all of our crisis situations. So again, with that said, let's go get us some Wendy's. All right, back in the car, heading on down to Las Vegas. Wait, did I really just eat at Wendy's? Yeah, I did. I mean, yeah, I owed Greg a Baconator, but it's Wendy's. Oh God. Who am I? I mean, I feel like I'm having a real identity crisis. Screw it, I can't go to Vegas yet. Gotta make a stop over in Jersey first.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which of course includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcast, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and AHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We'll be right back.